Was it upset?
Okay. Great. And it's working? Everything is going?
Yep, they're going.
Okay. Gentlemen, today is May 26, 2013. It is Sunday afternoon and the final Sunday shear for the year. Today, fascinating material. There's no question that Mamzeret in modern times is the most difficult problem we have, particularly in the state of Israel. Thank God we have the problem. It's a result of the mess of immigration, the kibbutz ha-galyot, and all that has happened here. Mamzeret, and here I want to come to something that Danny Shulman threw into class, I believe it was 2 weeks ago when we discussed the whole concept of Ein Adam Aseh Bilato Bilat Znut, and the whole problem with Mamzeret, with the Balei Tshuva, with the people sleeping together before marriage, Jewish people, the whole question of civil marriage, and we got involved with the whole question of Chazakot, and which leads us right away to an issue which is now on the front burner in the Israeli Knesset as well. Elazar Stern introduced the bill, I understand, dealing with Hafkat Kedushin, and the whole Chazaka issue. Is it ontological? Is it sociological? Can it change? The Rav went to bat against Rachman, Tavla Meitiv Dume, Le Meitiv Armala, that it's ontological, and yet you see that Ein Adam Aseh Bilato Bilat Znut is open to interpretation in every generation. So I revisited the Rambam that Danny threw out. I'm sure this is the Rambam that you meant, Hilchot Gerushin Perik Yud, Halacha Yutet. You should all look up that Rambam. It's a fascinating Rambam where the Rambam takes issue with the Ga'anim, and the Ga'anim say Ein Adam Aseh Bilato Bilat Znut is like an ontological concept that applies to everybody. The Ravid, the Ra'abad, totally justifies the Ga'anim. And yet, the Rambam takes issue and says very simply, he limits it, that the truth is people do Bilat Znut, and he limits it only in case of someone who is already married and he lives with his wife again after he divorced her. In such a case, Ein Adam Aseh Bilato Bilat Znut. Anyway, I want to tell you, I looked at the Rambam again and I revisited it. And it could very well be that what the Rambam is saying is ontological as well. Maybe I'm reading into the Rambam, maybe not. You're all free to look at it again and see. What I want to say is very simple, that it could be with the very creation, Yetzer Lev Adam Ra Minu Rav, and you already see the B'nai Nephilim, so that when this Chazaka was placed in the Torah Shebaal Peh, it already was placed on a dual level. Those that are Shoyim Metorim Mitzvot, Ein Achinami, Ein Adam Aseh Bilatot Bilatznot. People who live with Hefkeret, no such Chazaka applies. And it could be that the Rambam, as much as he disagrees with the Goyim, but the Goyim, we're talking about a society that is closed, a society that is observant, a society that is firm. You move into modernity, and modernity already begins with the French Revolution. You might even want to say before, with the Renaissance and then the French Revolution. You move into modernity, there is no question that this Chazaka totally disappears. And it could very well be that the Goyim and the Rambam are not really arguing. It's a question of reality. And the Torah itself, Torah Shebaal Peh, when it gives us this Chazaka, already understood it may very well function on a dual level. Anyway, it's worth revisiting the Rambam and seeing what the Rambam has to say with the Ga'anim. This is a very famous Rambam, and in every discussion of civil marriage, of all the problems that I indicated with the Upper West Side crowd, I used that as a euphemism, not Chas v'Chalila, to say everyone on the Upper West Side lives like this. But it certainly is there. It could very well be that in such a case, even the Goyim would have to admit, the Rambam is right, that Ein Adam Oseh Bilatot Bilatznut has no relevancy. Now, with Mamzerut, Reb Moshe, and I'm going to give you more tshuva today, and one tshuva is more fascinating than another tshuva. There's no question that Reb Moshe went out of his way, Lahakel, whenever he could, whenever he got a question in Mamzerut. The truth of the matter is that we have a rabbinic tradition like this, it's to a certain degree like Aguna, where we always try Lahakel in the Misgeret HaHilchatit. As the Medrash says, Medrash Rabbah, the Ma'at of Asukim, what did the children sin? The children didn't sin, it's the parents who sinned. So of course, here you come to a basic concept in Torah Shebichtav and Torah Shebaal Peh. Someone can immediately say, hey, Rebbe, what are you talking about? If the parents sin, the Torah talks about Mamzeret, why are you trying Lahakel? Why is Rav Moshe being so lenient? Why are the Poskim being so lenient? And this takes us back to basic Torah philosophy. I heard this from the Rav, I heard it from Rebbe many, many times. And anyone who studied philosophy, Torah philosophy, this concept will hit you between the eyes. Torah Shebichtav is din, without rachman. Torah Shebaal Peh is din with rachman. And why do you have a Torah Shebichtav? To frighten a person. You shouldn't be Mechalel Shabbos. You shouldn't do all these sins. Halacha l'maisa, what does the Mishnah in Makot say? We executed one person in 7 years. We executed one person in 70 years. Another opinion, if I was in the Sanhedrin, I would never execute anyone. When you look at all the requirements to execute someone with the Edim, the Hatra'ah, the Kabbalah, it's impossible. And so why do you have the Torah Shebichtav so frightening? And this, of course, was the Rav, and you'll find it in Kabbalah. You'll find that B'Olam Hazeh, we paskin like Beit Hillel, because Beit Hillel generally is more Mekil, it's Rachamim, but in the Olam Haba, we can afford to be more Machmir, because the people will be different, then we'll paskin like Beit Shammai. And you find this concept time and time again. So on one hand, we have the laws of Mamzeret to scare the heck out of people. You should know what you're doing is terrible, and the child will be a mamza. The child will not be able to marry. If chas v'chalila we have the child who has the sheila, then we will do everything in our power to help. Now, I want to continue. I gave you two examples from Reb Moshe. I want to give you another two or three today from Reb Moshe. And I continue in Igrot Moshe, Evin Ezra, the fourth time Reb Moshe dealt with it, Siman Chaf Bet. Once again, the tshuvers to Argentina. And you're going to find Reb Moshe has a lot of Dinei Isha Tshuvat to Argentina. So considering what's in the Argentine community today, you're going to wonder, how does Argentina, how does Buenos Aires get on the map? What you don't know that is after the Holocaust, first of all, many Jews ran away to Argentina in the 1930s. It was easier to get into Argentina perhaps than most countries or perhaps any other country. So kol hakavod to Argentina. Number two, once there were Jews there, East European Jews, many survivors went there. You want to know the proof that Argentina was the hub of Jewish life? There were 600,000 Jews there. You can check out on the website today. I don't know how many there are, but I would be amazed if there's even a third of what was there in the 60s into the 70s. 250,000 today, so you have less than half than what they had. I was almost right, but a little bit more than a third than what they had at the time. Not only that, in Argentina, Dr. Belkin, who was ahead of his time, Rav Shmuel Belkin, understood that Jews are doing well. They're in business. They're making money. He organized the kollel there. You're not aware of it. This is history. Rav Avigdor Zipperstein, who was a Rosh Yeshiva in YU, who was Rav Reines's grandson, Rabbi Belkin, sent him to Argentina to head up the Kollel. Now, the Kollel never really developed that. I mean, the idea that Rabbi Belkin has, once you have a Kollel, you have a presence, you can also fundraise there. Another proof of how important the Buenos Aires greater community was, JTS opened a branch in Argentina. I knew the rabbi who headed it up, Rabbi Friedman, Jr., and I knew others who headed it up. I don't know whether it still exists today, but at one time they had a thriving, dynamic branch, which shows you that you had Jews there. So you're going to find a lot of she'elot on Mamzeret, Aguna, and their address to Argentina. This one, did I give it to you? Simon Chafbet, right? Igrot Moshe Vanessa Chelik Dalet. This one is from 1980. It's to the Beis Din in Buenos Aires. And here you have a question. The woman tells a story, tells this to her daughter. What's the story? That she was married in 1939 in Bucharest. And she ran away when the communists came into Romania. And she gets to Argentina through Paris. And in Paris, she meets her husband from 1939. So I think if I can interject, what it's talking about is she survived the Holocaust. She lived in Romania. After World War II, all these East European countries became communists. Life under the communist was no picnic. I'm not even talking about religious persecution or atheism. Just simply, if you're familiar with the communist system, in other words, on paper, communism is beautiful. It's very attractive. Young people in the 1930s into the 1940s in New York, any intellectual who was Jewish, 90% were communist. I cannot tell you what I saw in my life. I had a good friend from Yeshiva, Milti Gitelman. So Milti's parents rented a home in Far Rockaway. Jewish people, they went touring around America and they rented out their house to pay for their trip. We go down to the basement, there's a curtain. We pulled the curtain apart. What a library of communist literature. This has to be the late 40s or the early 50s. And what a library. Everything translated into English, the proceedings and the Communist Party and in Russia. I don't know if Yitzhak met. I yet met Refusnikim, whose parents willingly left New York, willingly left Chicago, moved to the great Russian Empire. Why was communism so attractive? Because it's the problem each of you face. People want to consult me, Aliyah, the websites, Aliyah, money, a living, panasa. Could you imagine if you lived in a world where you never had to worry about panasa? Just think for 1 minute. You can live and do what you want. You can be what you want. What did the communists say? Each according to his needs. Each according to his abilities. Yeah, the Rakefet can't do anything. He's a street cleaner. Chesky is a skilled surgeon. Rakefet has 10 children. He gets paid per child. You have 2 children. My salary is 5 times as big as yours. You follow me? Is that beautiful or not? All the tension is out of life. But communism didn't work because, unfortunately, people are only human beings. And as we saw in Russia, every store closed from 1 to 3, siesta. You went into the store a quarter to 1, it was already closed. The people didn't give a hoot, didn't give a damn, pardon my French. Why? They're going to get paid the same salary, whether they sell or don't sell. So people fled. Romania went communist. And Romania, by the way, was the most liberal of all the communist states, basically. Romania, Hungary, they were more liberal than the others. But she runs away, she gets out. And in Paris, she meets her husband, and she's telling the story. And they don't get together again. Whatever happened, she doesn't explain. She doesn't like him, she hates him. She was too young when she got married. She made a bad choice. Listen, these are problems we live with daily. Those of you that are going to be in the rabbinate, you're going to deal with these problems daily. Whether you're in the rabbinate or whether you're at a university, an outreach, and kiddub, they didn't get together. And she goes on to Argentina. And in 1954, she goes to the rabbinate. This is the story she's telling. She goes to the rabbinate in Buenos Aires to ask whether she can remarry. She has a boyfriend. And after a month and a half, they tell her in Buenos Aires that they got a tshuva from the chief rabbinate in Tel Aviv that she can remarry. And she marries her second husband with chuppah v'kedushin. And this is the father of this girl. And the father died. There's nothing we can ask him. This is the girl. She wants to get married. There is no record of a get from the first husband. Well, what do you do? Look what the woman has said. Look what the woman claims. And Rakefet is a wise guy. He would make a case, Danny, that since the husband was left behind in Europe, she last saw him in 1939, 1940. He was left behind in Europe. He hasn't contacted her. B'diavad, if she remarried, what would we say? Avad Zichro, what we're speaking about, we'll speak about, that he didn't survive. B'diavad, he didn't survive. If he would have survived, he would have contacted her. But what did she say? She's in Paris on her way to Eretz Yisrael, and who does she meet there? Her first husband. So you can no longer say, you follow me, Yitz? What are you lost?
She, when did she meet her husband that she left him? This was before or after the war?
1939, she gets married. They separate. She survives in Romania. She runs out of Romania when the communists take over after World War II. She winds up in Paris on her way to Argentina. In Paris, she meets her first husband. Remember the story?
He survived.
He survived. So you can no longer say Avad Zichro. She's saying...
There is no record of a get.
No record of a get.
Did she ever claim that she received
no,
a get?
No. All she never said she received a get. Leave a get. No children. And all she's telling, she went to the rabbinate, told them the story in Buenos Aires, they turned to Eretz Yisrael, and the chief rabbinate sent back an answer, she can remarry.
Well, what's based on what?
We don't know. If we knew, we don't know. She doesn't know. We don't have the document. Watch. We don't know. It's exactly the problem. If we had the document, we wouldn't have a shaila to Reb Moshe. We would know why they paskin, what they paskin.
But wait a second, the very fact that they did paskin, doesn't that save the whole thing?
The very fact that they what?
That they did paskin that she could marry.
Yeah, exactly, but we only have her word for it. So look. You're quoting Reb Moshe. Reb Moshe says, in the local rabbinate they searched, and they can find no document. And Reb Moshe says, if there's no document, it's a sign that the whole story that she is telling may be a Bava Maisa. Could very well be that she never went to the rabbinate in Buenos Aires. Could very well be that she knew she couldn't remarry. Could very well be she remarried without a get. And this kid, Lo Aleinu, is a mamzeret. But then Reb Moshe says, coming back to the Rambam I showed you, based upon Sugyas and Shas, the father is not telling the story. The father is not alive. The mother is telling the story. The mother has no ne'emanat to say biti mamzereti. She is not believed. It's her father. This is her story. And her story, no documents, no support. It can very well be a Baba Maisa. Who knows if there was Chuppah Kedushin the first time? Maybe they lost the documents in the rabbinate. Could be she is telling the truth.
Did they ever
could
get be hold of the
father? The father's the no. They've never heard from him. No. They never heard from him again. She doesn't know where to reach him. And the second man already is dead. She's telling the story. She's not believed. Could very well be there were documents in Buenos Aires. Who says they survived? Try to find documents from the RCA when Rabbi Moshe Gorelick was president of the RCA. No, Chesky, try to find documents. You know what happened with RCA. They know the only thing left in the world is Louis Bernstein's book. You know why? When they moved. Everything was thrown out. They moved from here to there. Documents get thrown out. So there's no telling what the truth is. But one thing is for sure. The whole story comes from the mother, and the mother is not strong enough to pasul the girl. And then Reb Moshe says at the end, and this is what I've told you time and again, and every posek has to be aware of this, and even the Rav said to little Aaron Rakefet, you could be all right, that's a point. That what are we talking about here? We're talking about the girl. The girl is a lav, not a chiyuv karet. In other words, if the mother remarries without a get, she is an eshet ish. An eshet ish is chayav mita. The girl is lo tavo mamza b'kal Hashem. It's a lav. A lav is a lot less than a chiyuv mita. So once you're dealing with the lav, you can be mekil if you have a reasonable sources lahakel. And since it's the mother, not the father, we can be mekil. Okay. Simen Chof Dalet. One after another. Rav Meishan has a fascinating case. Once again, from Argentina. Earlier, 1976. And this already, he addresses the person, Harav Hagon, Malatu Kvodo, Harav Reb Menachem Gordon Shlita, Mehabet and Sedek, the Rabbanut Haroshitla Argentina. And he says, again, a woman who tells the following story. That in 1941, she got married, and after 10 years, she got married in Montevideo, returned to Argentina, and she tells the story of her second marriage, V'chazan echad sider l'chupa v'kedushin, v'ilnodam b'mesurin Suan Elu Beinubat, that she got married, a chazan was Masada Kedushin, a second time, no get from the first husband, and she had a boy and a girl. Now, Rav Moshe is going to go into a whole description of the chazanim and what the matzav was in Argentina at that time. And essentially, it's a replay of the United States 1880s, 1890s, 1900s. And the story is very simple. I lectured on it in my Monday class. Story is very simple. Whenever immigrants come to a new country, they can make any claim in the world. No one can prove them wrong. In the old country, Herbie could not make any claim that was not valid because everyone knew him. Knew his parents, knew his grandparents. You couldn't fake around. Everyone knew you. You come to America, you came a little kid. I often tell, I knew someone from Bnei Akiva. He's dead many years. I don't want to mention his name. He always claimed he had smicha and a doctorate in Europe. When you asked him for the credentials, lost in the Holocaust. So you see, anyone could do what they want. That's why when you come to Israel, you have to go. Yitzhak and I will tell you, I don't know, Michael, you also went through it. They have to go to the Nusrat HaTim. Your credentials have to be evaluated. They have to check your degrees. For a time, they didn't want to give credit to YU because the kids spend a year here and it's not accredited. Well, you don't know what went on with, you know, with some of the pencil pushes in the government offices here. But all right, on the other hand, you have to understand Israel. People are coming in from all over the world. 50,000 medical doctors came in from Russia. No, where's your certification? How many years? What do you know? What kind of specialist are you? They have to see the documents. And by the way, in Russia, there was a tremendous industry of forgeries. You understand? In America, we never had an industry like that because how many people come in Aliyah? All right, so the people who come, you're not going to get involved in forging documents that doesn't pay for the forges. And generally speaking, American people who are coming are religious Zionists who, you know, are sincere. The Russians came in their masses. It was an immigration, not an aliyah. They had to get out of the communist empire. So Israel had to be very strict. They had to take exams, had to requalify. Nowadays, in every hospital, a very high percentage of the doctors, the nurses, of many of the people working on in the hospitals, the rehabilitation, you're going to come across Russians wherever you go. When my mother was hospitalized, the head of the department was a Russian woman. I gave her a gift, my book, Washington, with the whole story of Russia, with the pictures. She was in heaven because she knew many of the famous refusnikim. But when you come to America 100 years ago, 110, 120 years ago, you need panasa. Again, it's not a communist system. You have to make a living. No, this guy becomes a medical doctor. This guy becomes a lawyer. This guy opens a business. What the heck can you do? You learned a little bit in Europe, suddenly you're a marriage performer. Suddenly you give gittin. Suddenly you do brit milah. There's no regulation whatsoever. It was totally hefka. So exactly where she remarries, and she says, a chazen, a sideh lechem kedushin, and the Beis Din doesn't know what to do. So they went and they made a drisha v'chakira. And they want to find out what happened in 1941. What was her first marriage like? And remember, she's living in Montevideo. She's not living in Argentina. And they do a drisha v'chakira. And they find in the newspapers, and evidently the library saved the newspapers, there was not one rabbi there at all. There was not even a regular chazan there. But there were many people who claimed that they were chazanim misadrei kedushin.
Says that you need to be a rabbi.
Say that we'll get there. We'll get there. Relax. Reb Moshe is as smart as you on that level. Take my word for it. We'll get there. We'll get there in a few minutes. And he finally gets hold of a chazan in Argentina who knew the situation there. And this chazan, who is really, Reb Moshe says, they're telling him he's a Yirei Shamayim, and he said there was one chazan there who was a Yirei Shamayim. They contact him, and he looks through his pinkas of people he married, and he cannot find these names. Now, what are we talking about a pinkas? This is also very fascinating. Shmuel Yosef Agnon, Shai Agnon, recognize the name? Have you read his writings? Have you taken a course in Agnon? Shai Agnon was the greatest modern writer we had in the state of Israel. Ayet Lo Aleinu attended his funeral in 1969 or 70. Check when he died. I think it was 69. He won the Nobel Prize. He made a Shachiyanu, B'Shem U'Malchut, a fabulous Jew. By the way, his in-laws were Yekes, and they were very opposed to the marriage. What kind of butlin is this from Galicia, from Poland? What kind of panasa will he make? And could you imagine they were opposed to their daughter marrying Shai Agnon? Shai Agnon, in one of his novels, writes about this mohel, And today I should mention that with Simcha, I have a new great-grandson born a few hours ago, Kanayim Hara, 10 pounds, onto 10 pounds, like his older brother, like his father. When I walk in the street with some of my grandchildren, no one will start up with me. Take my word for it. Even the Turakata guy, even the Satma guy who sees it, Tzionidati, but he will not start up with Rakefet with some of his 6'3" and 6'4" grandchildren. So a model, they used to keep a book of all the children they did Brit Milah for, because in Gemalt and Erev Yom Kippur, the Mohelim would read all the names that should have a schut before HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that they brought this past year another 123 Jewish children into Brit Milah, into the covenant. So you see, people who Masada Kedushin, Brit Milah, some of them kept the record. This cousin who was a Yerusha Mayim, he kept the record, and he doesn't find one name at all. And Reb Moshe himself describes what went on, that it was total chafkered, and no one knew who was who, and it was like America 50, 60 years ago, so there's no chazaka that there is kedushin. But then Reb Moshe raises the issue, who says you need a masada kedushin to get married? All you need are two witnesses. All you need are two witnesses, but you need two kosher witnesses. And Reb Moshe goes into the whole question. First of all the chazanim outside of this one concept were machalalei Shabbos, what, bikosim gemurim, that's what they wrote to him from Buenos Aires. And Reb Moshe says, obviously, you know my viewpoint. You see, the apostle, someone that he's an epicurus, you need Adam. You need Adam to come and testify as a Machalos Shabbos. But Reb Moshe has tshuvat that there's a chazakah as well. If someone is known to be an epicurus, to be a Machalos Shabbos, you don't need Adam. That automatically, there's a psul. You know he's not from. Who else would be the Adam? So here Reb Moshe says that if the chazan is not from, the people getting married are not from, then who would be the Adam? Generally speaking, people who know nothing. What did we tell you last week? Two brothers were Adam. They'll take relatives. Generally speaking, relatives are psulim le'edot. In other words, Rishon b'Rishon is certainly the Oraita. What about Sheni b'Sheni? It's certainly the Rabbanan. Sheni b'Sheni would be first cousins. But let's say you'll take second cousins, third cousins, a kveis. Yeah, but they're not Shomer Shabbos. Then Reb Moshe raises the question that could be that this marriage took place in a shul, she claims. Well, if it took place in a shul, people are coming into Davin. Mincha, Marav, they begin, what's going on? Two kosher Adam peek in and see the marriage. Knew if they see the marriage, maybe that is enough to create a marriage. Maybe those are Adam. Maybe that already creates Ein Adam Oseh Bilato Bilatznot. Of course, this gets us involved in a different halachic question that all of you as rabbis are going to do something to avoid the problem. Gentlemen, why do we say under the chuppah you're being Masada Kedushin and you tell the Chatan, appoint Ephraim and Herbie to be the witnesses to the exclusion of everyone else present? Why do you say that? Because you get involved in the whole question, Eidud Shabbatla Miktzata Batla Kula. In other words, if you have 1,000 people at the chuppah, and I'm going to be at a wedding, Be'ezrat Hashem, in a few weeks of a great nephew, and my brother tells me over 1,000 people will be there, it's going to be very interesting to see this wedding. I hope I can push my way up front to give my brother a mazel tov. He's the grandfather. But these are kids, you know, that are totally involved in the Chardali world, and the Shemin Vesolet of the Chardali world will be at this wedding. And everyone's watching. If you have two Edom up front, and among the 1,000 people, there are a few there, Mechalalei Shabbos, a few there who don't believe in Torah Shebaal Peh, Eidat Shabbatna Mikzatla, Batla Kula. That's why we're Miyached Edom. But that's a Chumrah. So Rav Moshe says, yes, could be that two people peeked in and saw what was happening. So that's what Rav Moshe says, that to say ad kedei kach, that this would create a marriage, that far we can't go, because the chazan is pasul li'evet. Whoever he appointed were probably krovim. The krovim were mechalalei Shabbos, and even if you'll say it was distant relatives. By the way, we in general try not to have cousins at all, because it gets involved. Sheni b'rishon, rishon b'sheni. We keep away from cousins. You follow me? Whenever a rav will ask two witnesses, he'll always ask, are you related in any way to the chatan v'kala? And we keep away because the rabbanim, of course, made hachaka of additional relatives. It's a whole simon you'll see in Shulchan Aruch of additional relatives that are psulim. So we keep away from krovim. But to go and feel that you're going to have people who are Edom and not Krovim with a chazan who's an Amorit Zabur in any Yerei Chet, and in an area where Shmirat Shabbos is 1 out of 100, Ad Kedei Kach, we are not Choshesh. Now, they did find in the government rules, and this is, of course, when you have a marriage bureau, marriage licensing, and you have a civilized country, a record can be kept. In other words, when we came in Aliyah, we went and got a copy of our marriage license, or at a certain point, I forget already, you pay a few dollars, they give you a copy of your marriage license, proves you were married civilly. That did exist. So we do know she was married at least once. But to say that there was chuppah v'kedushin, the marriage license or the marriage certificate would have nothing to do with chuppah and kedushin. Zelechud v'zelechud. And people who get married civilly, and that's what the marriage license said, and evidently in a country where you did not have to get married civilly, you only needed permission to get married, but you can get married religiously, like the United States, not like France. The fact that they got married civilly may very well show they didn't care about chuppah v'kedushin, just the opposite. In addition, how do we know this whole story? We know it from the lady. Once you know it from the lady, she can passel her children. So with all these sveika, Reb Moshe finds it very, I would say, easy, al pi halacha, lahakel in this particular case. What comes at the end of the tshuva is most fascinating. Because here you see Reb Moshe as the human being, and what he says is very interesting for us who are Rabbanim at this moment in time. Reb Moshe throws out the question, why did the woman tell us this whole story? Who had to know about the first marriage, the husband? She left him. Then his second marriage, and Rav Moshe says, you know why the woman tells a story like this? Because her second marriage, she was over 30. If a woman first gets married over 30, she is ashamed. What's wrong with her? What's the matter with her? She wanted the second husband to know, wanted the children to know, that she was married before. She's not a B'dieved wife. She got married 18, 19, whatever the age. She was attractive. She found a man. Nothing the matter with her. It went wrong. She'll tell you the man was no good. But don't worry. You're not getting B'dieved merchandise. That a lady that had no choice. Very interesting comment. No, you bring it home to your wives. What would they say today? Yehuda, you've seen Srugim? Know what we're talking about? You're living in Israel or you're living in China? You're living in the coal house, though. You're half Israel and half China. Okay, I got the answer. Ephraim, have you seen Srugim? Tell the class, Srugim. It's an award-winning, you can buy it, a TV series, a sitcom, filmed in Rehavia, Katamon. The two people who did it, I grew up with their parents. These are children of American Olim. I grew up bosom buddies with both sets of parents. The Leza, the Shapiro, his mother's no longer alive. Zichrono Levracha. And the other parents, oh wow, Becky, B'nai Akiva, I know Becky from the time I was 10 years old. That's the mother. These are two kids with dual culture. And they made a series on our tremendous problem today. Men and women don't want to get married. They're conquering the world. Wearing a kippah is no longer a handicap. They're going to school. Feminism. The women can study whatever a man can and even more. The whole world is open to her. And they're so busy conquering the world. And
The women of the wall.
No, the women of the wall are, that's a different type of... a bunch of yentas. Halavai, they'd be only a bunch of yentas. The yentas didn't do that much harm. But what you taught the women of the wall is also a fallout of feminism. But this is a different problem. This is a real problem. That we can conquer the world. And then suddenly a man wakes up. He wakes up, he's in his 30s. Fine. He can go out with a 21-year-old. I mean, the sky is the limit. A girl wakes up in her 30s, the biological clock ticking away. You know, a man is in power yet. He doesn't realize when he's going to turn 50, he better get a cane already. But he's in power, 30, 40. And this is a tremendous problem. So you see today, a girl, 31, a PhD, she looks a man in the eye, you know, and there's no shame. You were busy, yeah, conquering that. This is a real problem. I'm not trying to sidestep the problem. It's a real challenge to us. How do we allow men and women to conquer the world in every field? And on the other hand, let them know that they have to marry and work out a happy marriage and compromise and not be self-centered and bring children into the world, that the Jews will have a future, will have it tomorrow. Now you just think about this. But you see, Reb Moshe is describing a different world. Ein hachinami, Reb Moshe hits the nail on the head. In Reb Moshe's world, in the world in which I grew up, if a woman wasn't married and hit 30, what's the matter with her? What's lacking? Where has she fought? And in Ivrit, Medubet, it's my old manyein, you say about a spinster, Ravaka Chamutza. You'll never say about a man, Ravak Chamutz. But Ravaka, Ravaka Chamutza. Very interesting. And this is Reb Moshe, and this is Reb Moshe, the human being. He threw in at the end of the tshuva a very fascinating comment on life. Okay, but he ends off the tshuva that we don't have to be choshesh to what she told us, to the svara, kivin she'im ha'emet kedvarecha, even if she's telling the truth, lo hayezel ha'safek. There are all types of questions. Was the chuppah kedushin? Was the chuppah kedushin good? There's so many sfeikot. It's a woman telling the story. Ein lechush klal. You don't have to worry. Let them marry. Chinini yedido Moshe Feinstein. Okay, let me take one more example. And here I have to tell you, it's a very moving shiva for me. It's Simon Chafhei. I'll tell you, it's from 1978. I'll tell you why the tshuva is moving for me. I know the person involved. I know the Rav. I know the family. It's a fabulous family, the Grona family. There were a number of brothers. The eldest brother lived up the block from me in Yerushalayim. He already was a chassid, but not a fabrente. He already was big. In other words, he was born into Lubavitch. He's an ain't there. This family grown of the Einiklach of the Alter Rebbe. They were cousins of the Schneersons. And the eldest brother, I was very close to his son, who was a classmate of mine, Rabbi Dr. Professor Tzvi Groner, Zichronim Levracha. His next brother was Itcha David Groner. Itcha David, Yitzchak David, the Rebbe sent him to Australia. It had to be to raise funds. I mean, Chabatnik would tell you the real story, I believe, for Merkaz L'Inyanei Chinuch, to raise funds. There was a wealthy post-World War II Chabad community in Melbourne and Sydney. They had done very well in business. And Itcha David came back to America, and he was a Lamdin Mufak, you should know. He was a real Talmud. He's dead today, but I saw him last in Melbourne when I was there. It must be 10 years ago or so. And a real big Talmud Chacham. And then the Rebbe sent him back to Australia, and he built the religious community in Melbourne. And Melbourne, very powerful Chabad community, Itcha David, a real Talmud Chacham, the head of the community. Groner is the last name. His next brother, I may be missing a brother or two, but the next brother was Reb Label. Do you recognize the name? Should live and be well. He was one of the closest Gaboyim of the Lubavitcher Rebbe. Reb Label Groner. Okay, so this Shaila is from Melbourne. Very interesting. And Reb Itcha Groner, I should call him Rabbi Yitzchak David Groner, but I knew him as Itcha David. And Reb Itcha David tells Reb Moshe that, and it shows you also the interplay between at that time Chabad and Reb Moshe and YU. It wasn't the world of today that is so bitterly split. You should know that I said a few complimentary words about Chabad. I've already been criticized that I'm over-complimenting Chabad. All right, I know the problems with Chabad too. I'm not, beyond the Messianic problems, the problems with shuls and some of the Chabad that can only go their way. You know, they can't cooperate. But I was in the rabbinate, and I got along fabulously with the Chabadnik and Rabbi Gordon, Shalom Ber Gordon, Rabbi Shmuel Pesach Bogomilsky, Rebbe Yechaim Kalbach. I mean, we were bosom buddies and we cooperated. But it all right, could be because Torah was so weak we had to cooperate. Who?
Chaim Kalbach.
He was a Chabadnik. Pardon me? Absolutely a Chabadnik. Elia Kalbach. The twin. Rebbe Schleimel's twin. He was a Chabadnik, take my word for it. His wife, I believe, was a cousin of the Rebbe. Anyway, be it as it may, I can take criticism. If I have time at the end, I'll relate to a heavy attack on Rakefid on something I said in Shia. I'll relate to it at the end of Shia. I'll put it into context, but I want to do what I want to do now. Now, so Reb Itcha David writes to Reb Moshe that this woman comes before him with a document in German. And Itcha David says he doesn't know German, but he called in one of the Talmidim in the Chabad Kollel in Melbourne, and this young man who's a Ben Torah V'Yirei Shamayim, and he knows German. He comes from Germany. So he translated the document for Reb Itcha David. See, what Rabbi Groner tried to establish is that although he didn't hear it directly from the woman, it's from a document, but he's absolutely sure the translation is correct. And this individual reads the document that she was married in Romania, and she got a get from him Harav Dr. Schick Batamsavasa, I don't know if I'm pronouncing it right, the city in Romania. And who is this Rav? Now, here you have the tremendous problem of Gittin. Now, Gittin, I don't have to tell you, not every ordained rabbi, you know, some of you are going to be ordained and you're going to be rabbis and you're going to think you're big shots. Not every ordained rabbi, Siddur Gittin, you have to have shemesh, you have to know what you're doing. You have to have the ability, first of all, the biggest problem of all, how do you write names, Thomas, how do you write Thomas in Hebrew? How do you write Jerome in Hebrew? Jerome in Hebrew.
You say that again can be possible because it's spelled
Get can very well be possible if the name is spelled wrong.
You don't think there's evil involved in that?
No. Pseidon, not paskim la halacha, but you have to lachatchila know how to write a get. You have to know how to put the nicknames in. You have to know the mitzkaya, hamachuna. Anyway, there's
spelled. Rav Teitz, he's the only one that really knew.
Rav Teitz knew in our area. Today, they're Sfarim written. Rav Henkin wrote a whole kuntris of how to write names. Rav Bach wrote a whole kuntris. Rav Binyamin Bach, he's a Talmud of the Rav, yet from the Kollel in Boston. And he wrote a whole kuntris of Chrono Levracha. So this is the biggest problem that he get. Writing he get is 12 shurit, is a form. It's not every sofa who works for a base that knows how to write. But the Chakirat HaShemot, and you got to get the right name. How many people know the name? You're dealing here with all types of Jews. So, Rabbi Rubin, please control your conservative tendencies. There's a lachatchila and there's a bidiyavad, but lachatchila, you have to know what you're doing. And if the get has the wrong name, it's not good, it's not the person. Beside that, you'll have to ask Misadre Gittin in New York how they write. But New York is a problem. New York, how do you write? Beside them. A lot has been written.
Did anybody ever puzzle again because of spelling?
No. Gets that I know that are puzzled, they simply have the wrong name. Plain and simple. But, okay, be it as it may, the Avis here is from this Rav Dr. Schick. So now, you got to find out who was this rabbi. And this is why in America, you should understand, there were serious negotiations between Mori Rebbe and Reb Shol Lieberman and Boaz Cohn, the seminary, to set up a joint Beit Din. Why? Now remember, this is not a simple matter. If you set up a joint Beit Din with the seminary, what does it mean? It means you're recognizing the seminary as a Torah institution. But they were willing to a certain degree to do this if all the Gittin in the conservative and Orthodox movement would go through the Spaceden. And that would solve the problem of Mamzera to a great degree. And there were serious negotiations. Why? Exactly this reason. That you knew the Masada HaGet was reliable. Now, Professor Boaz Cohn, who taught at the seminary, headed up the Beis Din, his Gittin were accepted by everyone, including the Agudas HaRabbanim. Because Boaz Cohn joined the seminary when it was yet nominally Orthodox. There were many professors, teachers, who were totally Shomer Torah and Mitzvot. Boaz Cohn was a tremendous Talmud Chacham, Yerei Shamayim, and he was totally relied upon. So Rabbi David is trying to find
his brother-in-law, Rav Ruttenberg.
Which Rav Ruttenberg?
From Dayton.
Dayton, Ohio? Which Ruttenberg? Do you know how?
That's Naftali Goldstein. You know him from Elizabeth? His wife is a Ruttenberg.
Ruttenberg, okay. Boaz Cohn, I didn't know him personally. But I knew that everyone, the Rav, the Agudas HaRabbanim, Reb Moshe, everyone accepted his Gittin. So they're trying to find out who this Dr. Schick is. And Itcha David tells Reb Moshe, I asked one of the Romanians here in Melbourne, and he told me he was absolutely a Rav Shomer Torah in Mitzvot, and we Chas V'Chalila to even think He would do a get shalom kedin. And absolutely that it had to be a reliable get, and she had every permission to remarry. Then Itchin David says they checked with the Beis Din in Tel Aviv. Romanians testified before the Beis Din in Tel Aviv that Rav Shik was totally reliable. Then Reb Moshe says, and Reb Itchin David is telling him this, that everyone tells him in this particular area of Romania, the overwhelming majority of Jews were Shomer Torah and Mitzvot, and they could be relied upon that they would go to a proper Rav to get a get. Aye, but there's one other person that should be contacted. Gentlemen, Romania had the most liberal communist system. They had organized religion there. They didn't persecute. Romania sold Jews to Israel. Israel collect a vote to the state of Israel. You don't know how many schuyot the state has. They bought Jews. There was a price per head that the Israeli government paid yearly. There was a quota. Romania didn't want to let all its Jews out at once. They needed the Yiddish cup. But Israel bought out Jews every year from Romania. Who was the chief rabbi in Romania?
No?
Rabbi Moshe Rosen. So they turned to Rabbi Moshe Rosen and asked him. And he mentioned one rabbi in that neighborhood, Doc Meller, if I'm pronouncing it right, Rabbi Doctor. And he was not religious. He you couldn't depend upon. He wasn't Orthodox. So this is the question to Reb Moshe. Do we have to be chayshish? Do we? And Rabbi Gronis says to him, we don't know who the first husband was. He didn't survive. We don't know where he is today. We don't know who the witnesses in Tel Aviv who said, Eidut, that every rav there was from. We don't know how reliable they are. And can we marry this girl? She's a balat tshuva. She's from today. Are there any chashat here? And Reb Moshe says 100% that you're allowed to perform the wedding. She can remarry. There's no chash at all. The mother is the only source of information here. We don't know information from any other source. It seems the Chazaka is that the area was religious, that the people knew about tradition, the people went to an Orthodox rabbi. She gives a name, people testify he was a Masadik Gittin, he was reliable. I, Reb Moshe Rosen, raises a name and throws in a bit of a whammy, a bit of a suffix. But that doesn't affect the Iker Hadin, and she is permitted. At the end of this tshuva, Reb Moshe throws a bombshell. And this bombshell, anyone going into the rabbinate in the United States, and we're affected by it too here, this problem has no resolution whatsoever. No? Reb Moshe says at the end, yes, you can perform the wedding, but you shouldn't do it if she's marrying a Kohen. Whenever it comes to marrying a Kohen, someone who's a Bala Tshuva, we have chashat.
She's not a Grusha.
What's the biggest chash of all? Zona. What does the zona mean? Not the way we use it in modern Hebrew. But a woman...
She may have had an affair with a non-Jew.
Exactly. That she went to college, she may have had an affair with a non-Jew, even if it's only lo aleinu, for using this language, a one-night stand. Gentlemen, what Reb Moshe mentions here at the end, and he says, with Bala Tshuva, Baklal Zeh Bala Tshuva, Yesh lachush aleim shem v'nifsalu l'kulchona de nifla ula nachrim she poslim l'kulchona. This problem, I challenge you to resolve the problem. It repeats itself not a thousand times, thousands upon thousands, tens of thousands of times. The whole concept of sex today in the Western world is totally different than the Torah concept. When I grew up, and I have to say Dennis Prager has said this, and I give him credit, I don't give him credit for not being a strictly observant, total Torah Jew, which he should be, considering his upbringing, his parents, his family. But Dennis Prager said something very interesting. He said, when I was growing up in the 50s, I could have gone to a general high school, and outside of specific Jewish values like Shabbat, Kashrut, all my values would have been exactly the same as a Torah Jew. Now what does that mean? When we grew up, marriage was to procreate. You didn't have relations before marriage. Marriage was sacred. Sex and marriage were intertwined. Today you're living in a world where if you're not a Torah Jew, and lo aleinu, even among Torah Jews, God have mercy on us, how much we've been influenced by the outside world. Marriage and sex, two different concepts. Sex is sex. Kid is old enough, you go to high school, they give out the prophylactics in high schools in New York. I wouldn't be surprised if in secular high schools in Israel they give it out or make it available. I wouldn't be surprised. I've seen information how mechanchot, mechanchim on a high school level from the irreligious schools, you can't believe your eyes. You have to explain the responsibility, sex, the girl shouldn't get pregnant, but you have to encourage the children. And as Rakefet puts it, if a kid is old enough to drink, he drinks. Old enough to eat, he'll eat. He's old enough to have sex, he has sex. That's it. No, if you have that concept, lo aleinu, kids go away to college campuses. And I have gotten shilas I don't even want to repeat in public over the decades. And sex is as natural as buying a Coca-Cola. Well, if that's the correct sex, no, the Jewish boy, not too many Jewish boys, and a Catholic boy, a Protestant boy, a white boy, an Afro-American boy, an Arab boy, what does it matter? What does it matter? Then she becomes a Bala Tshuva, and wow, now what do you do when she comes to you, the Siddur Kedushin? What do you do when you're rubbing a kila? No wonder Danny is running away to U of P law school. Imagine handsome Danny Shulman, tall, good-looking rabbi. Now, Danny, that's very important in the rabbinate. You got the women flocking around you.
What's
and
wrong
active.
With a short, rabbi?
A short little rabbi is Rabbi Riskin or Rabbi Lookstein. They're the great. They're the greatest builders. You got it. You got it. But let me concentrate on Danny. And the women are flocking around him. And only you come to Rabbi Shulman to get married. He knows how to do a ceremony. He's an actor. He has proper diction. He makes a short speech. And it's powerful, impressive. And here, these people, the girl went to university. Mechalalet Shabbos. What do you do? She's marrying a Kohen. Gentlemen, I challenge you to solve this problem. What do you do? You don't ask, no? You don't ask. It's a problem. I throw it out. If any of you know of an easy solution, let me know. But in my many years as an active rabbi, or as a rabbi teaching rabbis, and as a rabbi answering questions, believe me, Reb Moshe hit the nail on the head. A bombshell thrown right at the end of the tshuva, right at the end. Everything he tells Rabbitchin David, no problem, no problem. You can depend. Shomer Shabbos, the Rav knew what he was doing. Romania, it's the mother who tells us everything. It's only a love, it's not courage. Well, beautiful, whatever Reb Moshe says, fabulous. And at the end, it's like a curveball. that comes right over the plate. You're stunned. You didn't even think. You didn't even lift the bat. You're out. And then you're out. That's it. This is Reb Moshe. Okay, I throw it out. I don't have it. Are you aware of the problem? New learned gentlemen, you've had many rebbeim. Has anyone discussed this with you? Did Reb Heschel ever bring it up in public? Any Talmud of Rav Shechta? Rav Willick? Talking about the poskim. Did you ever discuss it with your grandfather, Chesky? Not really. But you see the problem. Oh boy. And that's Reb Moshe. That's not me, it's Reb Moshe. Okay. I want to go.
Have you heard of situations where rabbeim were willing to ask that question?
Yeah. Listen, this is the whole problem. If a girl went to college, irreligious, graduated a good college, co-ed, irreligious, what are the chances?
But do you have a right to ask the question?
Don't you ask the question, were you ever married? So I understand what you're saying.
It's a different kind of question.
Okay, so well, it's not really different, but I understand what you're saying. Don't ask. Okay.
You assume she was involved.
Or you assume she was at some daycare. Hey, it's who are we fooling ourselves there? It's not so simple. Not so simple. Daniel, yes.
I didn't hear it from him. Someone told me that they asked the Shechter this question.
Right.
The question was that they were Kohen.
Right.
And so he told them that he definitely shouldn't ask. He didn't want to pass him. He told them that he should ask David Feinstein instead.
Yeah, I know. Whenever Reb Heschel, whenever my good friend, sidekick, who I grew up with. It's amazing how we think alike at times. That's exactly, so you're quoting me now. You're quoting Reb Heschel, you're quoting me. But you see, he sends all his difficult cases to Reb David Feinstein. You understand? And Reb David, for instance, with the Mitzitza Bepenau, he came out very strongly again at Reb Heschel. He said, man, they didn't ask Reb David Feinstein.
How about his brother?
Okay. No, Reb David is the bigger posek. Reb Rubin is the mechanech, the melameh, but Reb David is the bigger posek. Reb David you got to give all the credit in the world because you got to give all the credit because Reb David came to America knowing very little. How much could Reb Moshe, whatever he knows, Reb Moshe taught him personally. It was under the communists, and in America he blossomed. He and Reb Reuven, Baruch Hashem. They got to give Reb Moshe all the credit. His two sons-in-law, Reb Eliyachayim Shiskal Zeicher Tzadik Levracha, Yibodol Chaim Aruchim Tovim Reb Moshe David Tendler. I'd like to hear anyone know Rav Tendler how he would handle this. See, but Reb Heschel, he fouled off the ball. Let Reb David handle it. Let Reb David Feinstein. Okay, it's a real problem. My conscience bothers me because I know the facts here. I don't know. I agree with you, Michael. I agree with you.
But I would assume that the responsibility would be before the rabbi gets involved.
Yeah. No. What do you mean? It's your congregant. It's your congregant. What do you mean?
The
family couldn't care less. Why should they deal with it?
No, but the family care. Well, that's the issue. If the family doesn't care.
Yeah, but you're dealing with the issue. You're being the Sadeh Kedushin for a Kohen. Listen, I'll tell you one story out of the Rabbinate that I don't write about in Washington, but let me tell you, it's a sword in my heart. I get a call. I come back from, I was teaching at Yeshiva at YU. I come back. And Malka tells me, we're talking, 50 years ago, and I still remember the name until today, Mrs. Palhemus wants you to call her back. I say, Mrs. Palhemus, doesn't sound Jewish. Call her back. It's Rabbi Rothkopf calling. I used to use titles then. you can use titles. Young rabbis have to use titles. But when someone my age uses a title, boy, that's a bad sign. So it's a sign he hasn't learned Musa or hasn't applied the Musa he learned. So I call her back and she says to me, her daughter is converting and is marrying this young man and they want to get married in the shul in Maplewood. So I ask, I check out the boy. He's a student at Teachers Institute at Yeshiva University. And I asked my president to meet with them, and they're going to bring in the rabbi who's converting her from Brooklyn, I checked him out. He's a member of the Agudas HaRabban. Okay? So I told my president, I tell Sai Ottoman, Sai, meet with them, and I give my permission. I mean, I'm not being Masada Kedushin, it's the rabbi from Brooklyn, but it's fine with me. Sai meets with them, and he says, he calls me back, says, a very beautiful girl, nice boy, fine, good. 2 days before the wedding, I get a call from Brooklyn. I wish the story were not true, believe me. I get a call from Brooklyn. Rabbi Rotkoff, he tells me, the rabbi calling me from Brooklyn, "Vilt mit tana teva, you'll do a favor for me, it mesadik kedushin zayin, be mesadik kedushin." I look at him, I say to the rabbi, to the rav, the Agudas Rabbanim rav, what do you mean? I don't know the couple. You converted her. You're chveis, aber jetzt ich mach die ktuva habe chais gefunden as a kohen. I'm preparing the ktuva now, and I just found out that he's a kohen. She's a giyoret. I say to him, what are you talking about? What's that mendah? I said, not something. It's a lav. It's a lav. It's not. I'm saying it's chalalim. It's not that bad. But I say to him, I say, how can I be misad a condition? It's maybe an isidi araita, a giyoris, a zaina. He says, "No, he is right from Yeshiva University. I heard they were more lenient there. You don't know what I went through. I had to close the shul down. They went to a conservative rabbi, and he said, I don't want to mention his name. I once mentioned his name, and his grandson got mad at me. Cannot be. My father was absurd. The grandson or the son is Taka Frum, lives here. But everyone gets mad. I tell a story that happened to me." And under the chuppah, the rabbi says, Dr. Rothkopf is cruel. You understand? Because I had refused. They have Isaac Klein. They have so many responses, so-called. Lahatir, Safek Kohen, Bismanazeh, Yichus. So these are real problems. I don't have a happy solution. And I like what you told me about Reb Heschel. Go and ask Reb David Feinstein. Okay, that leaves me off the hook. I'll say go and ask Reb Moshe David Tendler. Notice that Reb Moshe Feinstein had two sons-in-law. They were both named Moshe. One was Moshe David, and one was Rebellion Moshe. So both of them had Moshe in there. But I'm not Paskin Lalachas. I know. The Sefer Chassid, it's a different name. The Sefer, I have a Talmud, a big Talmud Chacham, married to the daughter of a bigger Talmud Chacham. His name is Chaim Tzvi, and his father-in-law's name is Chaim Tzvi. And no one even added a third name. Had they asked me before the wedding, I would say, yeah, a third name, Chaim Tzvi Yaakov, all right? But no one even asked me. Yes, I want to end off. I want to go further.
Okay, I had the following situation where a giyorit
right.
Is going to get married to a man from Holland.
To a man?
From Holland.
From Holland.
Who's a Cohen.
Okay.
Okay, now here's the situation. So he says that his mother was, during World War II, in order to survive, she slept around.
And he's the son.
And he's the son.
So it's a chalil already.
All right. So he slept. She slept.
I know cases like that from England with the American troops.
They want to get married.
They can get married.
So, but the bait, and they didn't want to do that. So I found in Moshe a tshuva of a woman.
Well, wait. The bait in where?
Here, in Eretz Yisrael.
Why?
Here.
It's over.
Here. They didn't want to do the giyur because she's going to marry him.
Yeah, but he's a chalal.
Yeah, I know. So what happened was this.
Yeah.
I'm sitting in shul one day in Rosh Hashanah with the chazan this morning around. And I decided...
the chazan is what?
And he was dominating a little too stretched out.
What was the word you used? Chazan?
He was fooling around.
Fooling around, okay. V'nema.
I looked up and so I was reading Reb Moshe.
Right.
I heard myself say.
Not reading, you were learning Reb Moshe.
I was learning Reb Moshe.
Okay. Yeah, go ahead, yeah. You were learning Reb Moshe.
I call it Hashkocha. I discovered the following case. That Reb Moshe says a family came from Brooklyn, from people whose son is studying in a yeshiva, and they want, she wants to get married to the Ovid. And they asked her Moshe to, what should they do? And they come from Odessa.
Right.
And the mother was, and the father were part of the Jewish underground. They were all crooks, because Odessa was a port city.
Right.
And they all fooled around and slept around.
Right.
So, but Moshe says, if that's the case...
No problem.
No problem, because the wife... And so therefore, he's a Kohen, but he's not really...
Right, he doesn't have the status of a Kohen.
So I Xerox this tshuva.
Right.
And I brought it to the Beit Din.
Right.
So the Beit Din, so Moshe, I said, it's the same thing, except that instead of...
Right.
This is an Aram.
Right.
So they did not want to move on that too fast.
Right.
So they sent it to Rabbi Eretro in London.
Right.
He read it through, and he wrote back that it's all filled out.
Baruch Hashem. I can only tell you, it shows me the Beit Din here, not Lamdanim, because this is not a, such a difficult shaila. The shaila I'm raising is infinitely more difficult. The girl who went to college, do you start asking questions? But here is...
Mike was right. Why
would
you... I wouldn't ask the question.
I don't... Say this, so you're running away from the problem.
If the mother's a chalala, yeah. He's a halal.
Right.
What happens if he wants to go and do it?
He can't. He's not a Kohen.
But he says he's a Kohen.
He's not a Kohen anymore. Finished. He's a halal. Look into the halal. Look into the
Rabbi
Lozen
from Soviet. He was there.
Right.
Said to the man, number one, when you go back to Holland, you have to promise me you're not going to do it.
Right. Right, a Kohen. You're a regular Israel.
See if possible. Change your name.
Right, from Cohn. Very good. Rabbi Rosen handled very well. Gentlemen, I want to end off. Baruch Hashem, it's been a wonderful year of teaching. And I want to introduce you to a believable sefer and show you that everything I've said these last few weeks, elaborating on the Kuntres HaShach and B'diyevin and what it means, that Rakefet was right on line. And I want to quote to you from the Sefer Darkei HaHoda'ah of Reb Tzvi Hirsch Chayot. Now, we're talking about the Maritz Chayot, who lived in the 19th century, 1805, 1855, not a long life, was Rav of Zolkiev, which was an Ir Ve'Ein be Yisrael, I believe it's in Galicia. At that time.
My mother was born,
Kala Kavod. He was a Gadol Shebe Gedolim, but he never got the respect he deserved for one simple reason. He was in two worlds. Whenever you know too much, you never will be acknowledged. What do I mean by that? I'll give you a simple example. I met Rababa Braunspiegel, should live and be well. He's not well, I understand. Should have a foolish shlema. I met Rababa in the 1990s in New York. Rababa and I grew up together. Mamish, in the Bronx, part of the same Chabura, a few blocks away. So I would, you know, exchange pleasantries and Abba asked how things are at Bar Ilan. I said, what do you mean Bar Ilan? He says, well, aren't you teaching Jewish history at Bar Ilan? So you see, when you're in Shas and Paiskim and you're in Jewish history, you never get the credit you deserve. When you're in Jewish history, they say, it's a Rosh Yeshiva, Bas Kenner, what does he know? When you're giving a shiur, they say, who the heck is he? He's a doctorate in Jewish history. What does he know in learning? So you wind up. So leaving that simple example, now let's go to an Adam Gadol, the Tzvi Hirsch Chayot. He lived, look at the years, 1805, 1855. He already was influenced by the Haskalah. He was a very organized Talmud Chacham. He had all of Shas and Paiskim at his fingertips. But when he published, it was very organized, like modern Sfarim. You all know him through his Mavolda Talmud, which has been translated into English and gone through many editions. Student's Guide through the Talmud. Now, he dealt with problems that no one else dealt with. I mean, if you're familiar with the Gezeira, Takana, Minhag, Agada. How binding is Agada? Can you paskin from the Agada? He was Isha Eshkalot in the full sense of the word. Now, in Da'kei Har Hora'ah, I'm quoting from Kol Kitvei. They've published their two volumes called Kol Kitvei Maritz Kayot. It works out on page 217. I'm quoting from page 217 and afterwards from page 227. It's in the first chapter of Da'kei Hora'ah. And it's like that chapter was written about the Shach. Klal Gadol Tzarich HaTaladat. You have to know some very important rule. Not always what we paskin in the Gemara will a Rav paskin l'halacha. And he goes in to the whole Shas Hadachak. And he says, sometimes there are viewpoints that are totally rejected. And nevertheless, we save the viewpoint, if I can put it into my modern language, which I got from Seinfeld. Jerry, I thank you. We keep it in the safe. We pull it out when we need it. But exactly like with Tzvi Pesach Frank, Afalpi she'ein mefasamim otam lahamon ha'am. We don't publicize it because the majority of people don't know how to learn. You can have thousands of people in a yeshiva learning, but to really have the breitkeit, the broadness of Shas and Poskim and what it's all about on the highest level, they're very few. They're very few. And I can tell you, Edut, I've spoken to yeshiva kids from Hesda Yeshiva, from Hebron, from Mechas HaRav, yeshivas in Yerushalayim. Some of the kids I've spoken with at Mir, they know how to learn, but it's isolated. It's not the totality and the wide breadth that Gedolei Yisrael have. And he's absolutely right. I can understand Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank, what he did, Lahatir Dos Mamzerim, with Bitul Hayet, with Hafkad Kedushin. You're going to talk about that, but Rabban, no one will understand. Hey, what are you making up stories? What's going on here? So you see, when your back is against the wall and it's Hefsed Meruba and it's Mishum Archim and it's Erev Shabbos and Pesach, Erev Shabbos and Yontif, and all the cases I gave you, remember with Erev Pesach and Rabbi Dov Hyman, Rabbi Aaron Hyman's parents, and the Beit HaLevi, and Aguna Mamzeret. Sometimes you pull it out of the safe, but a posek has to do it. You have to do it quietly. What's amazing are the two examples he gives here. He gives two examples, exactly the examples I gave in class. One, Avad Zichro. Avad Zichro, that's a mivridun that if the guy doesn't come back, he's dead. The majority of people who are on a plane that crashes in the ocean, the majority of people on a boat that capsizes, the majority of people who go to war and never heard from again, the majority of people in a tank that took a direct hit from a missile. That's Avad Zichro. Okay, we dismissed it. I explained to you why. Mayim Shein with himself. But that remains in the safe. And Poskim have a right to pull it out. And all the Poskim do, Reb Yitzchok Chanan, it's always the second sniff in modern times, Lahatia. Certainly today with internet, wow. You need a reasonable first sniff, and then you always have the second sniff. The other example he gives is even more fascinating. The sheet that I alluded to, where did see Pesach Frank and then went into Washington, Achmuma, with Jibim. You got to remember, that was a widespread problem. People died young. You die young, you have no children. Women were left needing chalitza. You're talking about modern times where people became apikarsim. People fell behind the Iron Curtain. I told you this story with YU, with the Beit Din, with Rabbi Ruchin Gerelik, with this guy. I mean, I'll never forget it as long as I live. They got this brother to finally give chalitza. Didn't know a thing about Yiddishkeit. And the women spat in front of him, right or wrong, you've seen chalitza. When he walked out of the room, when it was all over, he spat at the Dayanim. He spat, form Jew. And Rabbi Ruchin Gerelik, who was a genius, had tremendous insight, was a character par excellence, a volcano, but a genius, said, we can't come, we can't criticize him. It's the Eshtim. He came today, the first time he's introduced to Yiddishkeit. What did he see? You spit. No, if the woman spits in front of him, he spits in front of the Dayanim. No, you need chalitza. What do you do if it's an achmuma? And remember, that shita was dismissed. But you put it in the safe. It's a shita, Rabbi Yehuda Gaon, Huvada Beit Joseph. He gives all the sources. B'yavama shenafla lifnei numa shena skuka liyavim. Afal pi shehabeit Joseph katav shem sheinu mamin sheyatza defram ha'elu mitpi ha'gon. The Beit Joseph says, impossible. The Gaon couldn't have said such terrible words. Just because the brother's not religious, there's no zika. But this is a shita brought down in the Gaonim, by the biggest Gaonim. We don't paskin that way. But b'di'evad, we have a right to fall back on it. And let me finally end off the share a personal note. I don't respond generally to criticisms, particularly in Hashkafa, but here I just want to respond. It's mind-boggling what happens in life. There's a website, Circus. So they quoted in the last year, last Sunday it was, or two Sundays ago, I don't remember already, I dedicated the year to the memory of the cheese man, Rabbi Bistritsky, right, there's a, let me see this, here he is, Rabbi Leibel Bistritsky. So there's a picture of him, this probably is his high school, Lubavitch archives, this must be when he graduated high school, a picture of Leibel without his long beard. I recognize him immediately, that is Leibel Bistritsky. So I dedicated the shiur to him. So they put the shiur on this website, the dedication, calling it beautiful. So then their comments, first of all, people went crazy that they show Reb Leibel without a beard. All right. Then I evidently said that the Litvakin, we've lost out to the Chassidim. So a guy writes in, a whole attack upon me, they're Litvakin, they're alive and kicking, not idiots like you out of the 50s with kippots through gut, without beards, without that. So I just want to make myself clear. This critique is absolutely right. I'm talking about, of course they're Litvakin today. What am I, an idiot? I don't know what. This is not a picture of me. Here, right on the desk, a picture of me standing in front of Yeshivat Mir with a Talmud. Right there, right on my cup. I don't know that Hebron is a two-minute walk from here. I don't know that Lakewood is alive and thriving. I don't know that Mekaz HaRav is a creation. They try to say they're a Hemshekiyut of Balash, and of course I know Litvakin HaRav. I'm talking about the Litvische Welt that I knew. It's gone. What did I know? The world that all my Rebbeim from senior in high school, I already was in a college shiur. My Rebbeim were Reb Shmuel, Reb Noach Bonstein, Reb Shmuel Leiz the Volk, and Moriu Rebbe Hamopak, Reb Yosef Tov Halevi Soloveitchik. And it was amazing. Reb Yerucham Gerelik, Reb Mendel Zaks, all the Litvakin, Reb Meisha, Reb Yaakov Meisha, Kain Lesson, the Mashkiach, they were so different than each other. Their hashkafas, their viewpoints. The Lithuanian I knew, the Lithuanian I researched, the Lithuanian I lived in, and I remember I desperately wanted to go to Lakewood and remain in Lakewood, Rabbi Aaron Cutler in Lakewood, and Lesson Lach Fogel. Everyone thought independently. Everyone dressed differently. No two outlooks were the same. That is gone today. And in my humble opinion, Hasidus conquered all. When you look at the big Lithuanian yeshiva, everyone, that we dress the same, okay. In addition, you dress the same, you think the same. It's not Rakepit's critique. Rakepit wouldn't be smart enough to say such deep thought. But look into Rakefid's work, the Rav, Volume 2, where the Rav speaks about sameness. So I have a right to my opinion. Anyway, I never argue Hashkafa, whoever wrote that in. They write in with stupid pseudonyms. Zolmen sein gesund, and you should be Zeicher, the Larichet Yomim Tovim, and you should be Zeicher one day to understand the Litvak who tries to combine in his life a love for every Jew as best as he can, and a world of religious Zionism, B'nai Akiva, Yeshiva University, a little bit of Lakewood, an appreciation for Hasidus, but I plead guilty as charged. The Lithuanian world that I grew up in is gone, but thank God, not forgotten. There are a few of us left alive, kicking a little bit, including Rabbi Warren Goldstein and his book. So to reiterate, what did we do today? We proved Reb Moshe. We proved that I'm right. We proved that the Shach is right. The Dake Hurrah. And wow, when we begin again in Chodesh Elul at a certain point, in a few months' time, we pick up just where we left off. Now, I'm telling you in advance, the shirm I'm giving next year, Be'ezrat Hashem, I've never achieved the level that I hope to achieve, the uniqueness. It is 1 million shekel linked, dollars, should I say, $1 million linked to the shekel on the IOU list. Now tomorrow, I'm spending half the share. The topic I'm continuing, how can we come up with a psak? Who are we? Something new. Who gives us the right? And from there, I'm sailing into a riven. And I'm going to devote most of the year to why do Jews kill each other over a riven? Why can't we solve that problem? Okay? But we have to understand in halachic context, going further with the shah. Tomorrow, half the shir is to answer a question that Rabbi Rubin asked last week. I did my homework, and I came up with beautiful, mamish, I hope I'm going to hit the nail right on the head with the example, and in honor of the birth of my great-grandson and the engagement of a grandson last Thursday, without boring you with my Divrei Torah, I will... Tomorrow, anyone coming to Shir gets $1 million towards next year's Shayurim, so you shouldn't feel the Rebbe is pressing you. 1 second, a few freebies. If anyone wants tomorrow's tomorrow. Ah, this is a Mayadic article on a Reform woman rabbi married to a Catholic female, and she's demanding that the Reform movement should accept intermarried rabbis into Hebrew Union College and into their rabbinic organization. It's beyond words where they are today. This is Rav Leibel Bistritsky, if anyone wants. And, this is a document of documents. My grandson gave this to me. Whoever takes this will not sleep tonight. These are Paskvilas being given out among the draft, against the draft. And lo yitachen she'imal lebeni lui tishon tov v'layla v'yein leben pachot mukhsha tirak mipachad b'leilod abana shalu lipol chalau l'tumat hachiloniyim b'tzahal u'b'sherutim liyumayim v'ezrachiyim. You can't believe, gentlemen, we're in two worlds. And to solve Danny's problem, who's waiting so desperately to turn off the mic, let me wish everyone besora tova, jeshuvta nechamot, until we meet again in health and happiness. Das v'danya.
You don't have a love, right?